quiet down a little bit. We'll try to get started.
Great.
I'm a little quick. I'm the student body president here today. I want to thank all y'all for coming out on behalf of student government. It's a good crowd. About 100 chairs in here, so we've got a pretty good crowd. I'm just going to give you a brief kind of overview of how this is going to work tonight, what's going to go on. Stephanie Janes here is going to MC it. She's the chair of the diversity commission here today. And we've got a panel who hopefully can answer most of your questions and also take some feedback from you all. I want to stress that the event, this forum, is not a time for students to debate. So we don't want any, we're not going for back and forth here between students because, you know, we're not making the final decision on this. We'd like to give as much feedback to the administration as possible. So with that said, basically what will happen is Dr. Lunkadoo is going to give a brief overview of the summary proposal. I think all of you have an executive summary in front of you. Then we'll have Dr. Picard and Dr. Stafford give a brief overview of the process from where what's happened so far and where it could go or where it may go. And then we'll open it up for questions from you all. I want to ask and really, really please be courteous. Raise your hand. Just blurt out questions because then we can't get our questions answered. Stephanie will be calling on people to answer questions, so just raise your hand and kind of wait. Again, I want to say it's not to be a debate between students. It's not to be an aggressive debate between students. I know this is probably a heated issue and an issue that a lot of you feel strongly about. But this is a minor threat. If it does start to get too heated, and I feel like it's getting too heated, I do have sheets of paper, and I will go to passing them out for written questions, and we'll take them up, and I'll ask, Stephanie will ask the questions. But we would like for you all to be able to ask the questions and give feedback. We don't mind opinions. If you want to state your point or make a point, that's fine. But again, not directed at another student or a comment that was made by another student previously. So, without further ado, I'll let Stephanie stand up and take it from here.
Hello, good evening. Thank you guys for coming out. We really, really appreciate it. And like Will said, to be informed, you know. A lot of people already have their opinions on the LGBT center and all that kind of stuff, but we want you guys to form your opinions off of facts and to know exactly what it's for, the purpose of it, why we're doing it, where it would possibly be, all those good things. So, I'm going to start over. Thank you all for being here. Could everyone hear me all right without a microphone? Okay, good. I am Deb Lucadoo. I'm Director of Campus Activities at the GLBT Ally. I'm also very committed to all kinds of social justice issues, and I believe that as a public institution, it's very important that all members of the community feel welcome and respected, and that if anyone doesn't feel welcome or supported, that they would be given additional support from the university. So that's, I just want to be very upfront with you about where I come from on all of these issues, but particularly on the GLBT Center issue. I want to give you a little background just to kind of bring you all up to speed on the issue that's before us. The BGLA, which is our student organization, Bisexuals, Gays, Lesbians, and Allies, has been on campus in some form or another for over 30 years. So we've long had students involved in activism and in support for one another, and there have certainly been administrators on the campus who have provided additional support for that student organization for many, 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 many years. In the 90s, Project Safe was started on campus by Justine Hollingshead, and that is a training program for faculty and staff, and we do offer a session every year for students as well, who want to identify themselves as allies for GLBT individuals, and the training provides a good background and awareness about facts about GLBT individuals and the status of GLBT individuals in this country and on this campus, and provides some good sensitivity for individuals to be able to provide support to individuals for GLBT members of the community. So Project Safe is an important initiative that has been around the campus again for probably at least 10 years. In the 21st century, where we are now, a lot of great things have happened on the front of GLBT issues and concerns. The Senate passed a resolution early in the 2000s supporting the GLBT community by asking the university to include GLBT in the non-discrimination clause. It was determined by University Legal that because the state constitution does not include GLBT, that neither could the university's non-discrimination clause, but an addendum, an insertion was made that added GLBT to the non-discrimination clause to express the university's support for GLBT members of the community and expectation that, as with all students, that GLBT members of the community would be treated with respect and be free from discrimination and harassment. And the statement was issued by the chancellor at that time, Mary Ann Fox, that affirmed that and was made public, and our Chancellor Oblinger had reestablished and reaffirmed that in his statement last spring. And I attached that on the back of that executive summary for you to see. Sean Cunningham, who is the secretary of BGLA, early in the 2000s, I'm sorry, I'm really not good with remembering the exact years, so if you know the exact years, help me out here. But Sean was the secretary of the BGLA, and he approached me. At that time, the BGLA student group was brought under the sort of sponsorship of campus activities. And so we met, and we were working on getting ready for programs for the year and issues of concern. And Sean said, you know, I think we really need a university-wide committee that would look at GLBT issues and concerns. So I helped Sean to write a letter requesting that a university committee be established, and Sean sent that letter to Dr. Stafford. And Dr. Stafford convened a meeting with Dr. Picard, and Sean, I think actually Robin Siska, who was president of the BGLA, was at that meeting, because Sean was working at the time. But anyway, that didn't matter. In that meeting then, the decision was made, the agreement was reached, that instead of a specific committee for the GLBT concerns, Dr. Picard, when he arrived on campus as Vice Provost for Diversity and African American Affairs, had set up the University Diversity Advisory Committee. So we all agreed that a great solution would be to have a subcommittee, a GLBT subcommittee of the university's Diversity Advisory Committee. And Justine Hollingshead and I accepted and were privileged to accept the role as co-chairs of that committee. And we began to meet. In 2005, we had the first Everyone Welcome Here week of programs, GLBT programs. We had t-shirts that we gave away. They had the block S with the triangle, rainbow triangle, and that proudly proclaimed that everyone is welcome here at AC State. And we had no trouble giving those away to lots and lots of students and faculty and staff, and we had those t-shirts. So for 3 years, we've had the Everyone Welcome Here. We've actually had four, because we did the first one in the spring, and then the next one was in the subsequent fall. So we've had actually four Everyone Welcome Here's. This year, we extended it. We called it Everyone Welcome Here series of programs because we have so many programs that we want to do under that theme that we couldn't crowd it all into one week anymore. So we spread that out. We have series including a Brown Bag Lunch series for faculty and staff. We have student speaker series. These are monthly programs that are organized for as part of the Everyone Welcome Here series. In addition, we have a meeting that was here in the fall, and we have a poet who's coming in the spring. So let's see. We began our work in the subcommittee, and another important development that was part of the collaboration between academic affairs and student affairs with Dr. Stafford and Dr. Picard and Provost Nielsen was the establishment of a GLBT graduate assistantship. And if that graduate student is a part of our campus activity staff, and I cannot tell you how great that has been to have a position that's been devoted entirely to GLBT programs and services. It really has been a wonderful advancement for GLBT concerns on campus. Sam Morris is our current student in that position. He's done a fabulous job of launching that position for the campus. So that was an important development. And then the GLBT subcommittee has participated in a couple of important sort of developmental opportunities. We traveled to Washington to the Human Rights Campaign joint workshop on transgender issues. So we learned a lot about transgender students and individuals. There's still a lot that is not known about that part of our GLBT population, but we learned a lot, and we have a lot more to learn and a lot more to do in that area. Another thing that we did was participate in a teleconference on establishing a GLBT center on campus. And that was conducted by a woman at UCLA who's been very active as a consultant to campuses that want to establish centers for GLBT students and other community members. So, after two pretty busy years, the subcommittee worked together to identify what we thought was really the most pressing issue for advancing and more progress on the issue of GLBT concerns, and that was that we really needed a center. We really needed a GLBT center on the campus whose focus was entirely on GLBT issues of concern. So the mission, I think the purposes are laid out in your executive summary, but primarily the center's purpose is to serve all of those GLBT members in the community, as well as all of those who are not GLBT in the community. That's everyone. So everyone would be welcome at the GLBT center, just as everyone's welcome at NC State. So there are some more details for you about what the GLBT center would serve, how what the purposes would be, and I think those are details that you want to find out more about tonight. We are pleased with the accomplishments that have occurred since the turn of the century, but we feel like we have a long ways to go. Some of the information that we provided in the proposal includes the climate survey results that were from 2004 that demonstrated that really as you break it down demographically, the results of the climate survey that was administered to the entire campus, that we have certainly various subgroups of students, and you don't want to put everybody in little boxes, but of course we do that. We do sort things demographically. And discovered that when we look at the GLBT students compared to all other students, their responses really did indicate that their experience is not as positive here as other students. That they're more likely to feel physically threatened on campus, they're more likely to be treated disrespectfully in the classroom. So there's certainly an urgent need on our campus. I think some of the recent response to the idea of a GLBT center on the campus that's taking place online has underscored that there are certainly a significant number of campus members who are disrespectful when it comes to GLBT issues. So everyone is welcome here at NC State. Everyone needs to feel welcome. All students are paying tuition. Students' families are paying taxes. And they have the right to expect that when they come here as students, they'll be treated with respect and provided support if that respect is not there. So that's really the basis for this GLBT Center proposal. The full proposal, which I've provided the web link for you, provides a lot of details from the campus climate survey that might answer some of your questions about, well, exactly what kind of differences are there in the experiences of GLBT students as compared to other students. Would y'all like to come in? There's plenty of seats right
there. In front of y'all want to come around.
So I think, unless there are any questions about some of the background.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll just save all the questions till the end, everybody.
Next, we're going to have the process on what's happened up to now and how the process will continue.
Yeah, 20 years ago, I would have split my pie there. A lot easier than I am able to do so today. Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Dr. Jose Picard. I'm the Vice Provost for Diversity and African American Affairs. And I was going to sort of summarize the timeline and lead us to bring us up to where we are today, but Dr. Luckadoo has really done a nice job of doing that already. So what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes, because I know we want to get into a conversation here, it's just to take a few minutes to give you a sense of where I stand. And by my title, you probably can deduce that. I am fully, wholly committed to the establishment of a LGBT center on this campus. It's way past due. It's way past due. This is a university. And the GLBT faculty, students, staff are part of our community. They're part of what makes us a university. And everyone who comes and is part of this family and part of this community needs to feel welcome. We have evidence that is not the case. So we strongly believe, I strongly believe, that a center is needed. It serves a very important purpose, and I will work diligently to see that everything possible that I can do to create a center that will serve this community. And so I'm going to stop there. We've had a series of meetings. I'm going to allow Dr. Stafford to sort of take some time here to share his views and to share where sort of we are at now. As you know, the proposal has been forwarded. It's being very carefully considered. We're looking at various options. As you know, things at the universities will sometimes move a little bit slower than we want them to, but this is important, and we're gonna move forward with this, and I'm committed, and I'm sure what you're going to hear is that campus leadership is committed to meeting the needs of this community. So I'm be happy, and I'll welcome your questions, to answer your questions, and I welcome your questions and comments.
It's easier to stay there.
Is this okay?
Yeah.
That way I wouldn't have to do the same thing that was they did when you went out. Good evening, everybody, and I want to thank each and every one of you for turning out tonight. A few more thank yous. I want to thank the subcommittee of the University Advisory Diversity Advisory Committee for the work they've done on this proposal, especially to Dr. Bill Swallow, the primary author of the proposal. It's very well done, and I want to commend them for the work they've done, and all the members of the Diversity Advisory Committee for all the work that they do. I want to thank Stephen Government for sponsoring this event tonight. It's a very important part of the university environment. They have opportunity for open and free dialogue, and so thank you all very much. I also want to thank the State Senate for your consideration of this proposal and your debate and the support that you have voted to give to this proposal. Now, just for those of you who may not know how I look at these issues, in all the years that I've had the honor to serve as the Vice Chancellor here at NC State, one of the most important values that I have tried to articulate and emphasize, not only to my staff but to the entire campus, is that every one of us, this is true for me and all of my staff in student affairs, and I would hope it would be the case for everybody in this room and on this campus, I believe that we should all work to create a campus environment that welcomes, supports, and provides every opportunity for success for every person who comes here, especially for every student who comes here, because that's what we do in student affairs. For every student who comes here, and this is the important part, regardless of their race, their gender, their sexual orientation, or any disability that they may have. And I think it's also important for members of our community who are not members of the minority categories to which I just referred. And I'm a good example of that. I'm a white, male, straight guy with, some people may think I have some disabilities, but I don't qualify under ADA. And it's important for people who are not in those categories to stand up and to speak out in support of these issues. If we expect all the issues that involve sexual orientation to be taken on and worked out by the members of our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, guess what? We're in a lot of trouble. It is very important for those of you who are not in those categories, as Dr. Luckadoo mentioned earlier, to step forward and help us create the kind of campus environment that I just described. And so on this particular issue, I am very proud to say that I am a long-standing ally to our campus gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. And I'm committed to do everything that I can to help create the kind of campus environment that will support you and welcome you and provide every opportunity for you to be successful. And that applies not just to students, even though that's our primary focus in student affairs. It applies to everybody on this campus. And for reasons that are mentioned in the report and that have already been referred to tonight, it's very clear that we've got a lot of work to do to reach what I have just stated. And for that reason, from my point of view, the need for a program or an office or a center, I mean, we can call it a lot of different things, that will be there to help educate the entire campus community, provide support for the members of that special category to which I've just referred. In my mind, we need this very much. Now, the report has been, the proposal has been put together. It has been sent to Provost Nielsen and myself, and I'm very pleased to let all of you know that Provost Nielsen is here tonight, right over here on the second row. The proposal has come into the two of us, and we now have the responsibility to respond to that. In my mind, the major challenge for me and him and others who are in positions to make decisions about this is to develop ways to find the resources to move us from where we are now. And I want to thank Dr. Luckadoo for her summary, because it's a very good summary of the activities that we have pursued over the last years. And we have made a lot of progress. And so right now we're somewhere like this. And we have a part-time graduate assistant who works in an office and in a program that could very easily become a GLBT center, if we decide to call it that. But the challenge here will be to find the resources to do that. And I'm talking about money, talking about space, and I'm talking about staff to do that. So that's a challenge that I see in front of me, and I'm committed. I want all of you to know that I am committed, along with my colleagues in the Division of Student Affairs and in the Provost Office and other places, as appropriate, to work to move us in that direction. You know, it's the proposal costs you a lot of money, and we're in the middle of a budget year. I mean, the budgets for this year have already been set. They were set back in the summer. And there's very little opportunity at this point to identify and allocate significant financial resources to a project like this. And so our next window of opportunity will be as we move into our next budget year, and those kinds of decisions will most typically be made over the summer. So that's where we are. We've got a lot of work to do to look at, think about, discuss this proposal, and to determine the ways and the extent of which we can move from where we are now to what is outlined in that proposal. Thank you very much for being here tonight.
Okay. We're going to open up the comments and questions. Before we do, we're going to get everyone up here to introduce themselves and their position and who they are, what organization or what they're representing. We do ask that you keep your comments, if you're just a comment or question, to 1 minute, just to be able to allow everybody a time to say or ask questions. And we're going to try to wrap things up around 8:30, which is exactly about an hour. So we'll start off with introducing. We'll start to end with Dr. Thomas.
I'm Richard Tyler. I'm one of the counselors across the street at the Counseling Center. I've been here about 4 years now, and I am a member of the LGBT community as well as a licensed professional counselor for the last decade or so.
A member of the center.
I'm sorry?
A member of the subcommittee.
I'm a member of the subcommittee, but I'm also gay.
I'm Thomas Davitt, the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs.
Jose Picard, Vice Provost for Diversity and African American Affairs.
Right, I'm Bill Swallow from the Department of Statistics. It was my privilege to actually
write most of the proposal. Somebody had to take pen in hand and actually do it, and I was the one who was lucky enough to be chosen, and I am glad to have done it. I sit on the GLBT subcommittee, and I also am a member of the LBT community.
Deb Luckety, Director of Youth Activities, co-chair of the GLBT subcommittee. All right. We'll not open up for questions and comments.
I just want to ask the state how NC State compares to other colleges in the UNC system, and if any other universities have a center like this, or if one of the first or one of the last.
Basically, the universities have. Yeah, because that
answer
will
be that.
She's actually done the research. So. In the UNC system, only the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill has a center. There is at the University of North Carolina Charlotte a graduate position similar to ours here, who advises the student group at Charlotte. There are other sort of committees, there's a group in the counseling center, but around the system there's really only one declared UNC center at UNC Chapel Hill. Of our peer institutions, we are one of three that do not have a center, so there are 16 peers. There are 13 of those institutions that have centers through the
house. Okay. What kind of services will the center be providing?
Yes, all of those things. We hope to, if we have a censor, we hope to be able to hire a staff person who is qualified. We wouldn't necessarily look for a certified counselor, but someone who would be qualified to do advisement of students who, if they needed additional counseling, we would certainly refer that our person would certainly refer that student to the counseling center. But we would do outreach programs. We would continue to offer the Project SAFE training that we do now for faculty and staff. We would continue to support the DGLA student organization. And we would probably be able to do a lot more programming on the campus, both support programming for the GLBT community and awareness programming for Evermore. So a lot of that we do currently with our graduate students. We hope to take it to a higher level, obviously.
Okay.
We didn't
cover each other, but I did notice a question. The document says that Duke and Chapel Hill have established the GLBT Center, so I just want to ask this question.
Duke is not a member of the UNC system, so I didn't mention them, but yes, they do.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to ask them.
Okay, you're going to take. Oh, thank you very much. I think it's important that you differentiate between an actual building center and an office. I think that's one of the things that's been lost in the minutia of determining what exactly a center is. So what you've actually stated in here gives the impression that there's going to be an external structure that's constructed, currently the universities that you've listed as peer universities do not have their own standalone structure. They have offices that are located in specific buildings. So could you extrapolate on that, please, and make sure that everyone is clear that there's a difference?
In the proposal, we specified a desired minimum amount of space that we would like to have. We said we need to have a programming space and we need to have private office space. So we looked at the Women's Center and Talley Student Center as a sort of a blueprint or a model for what we might. Of course, we'd like to have a lot more space than that, but we said, you know, that's kind of a great configuration. They have a large programming space and they have private spaces that are very small, but they do serve as private offices for the Women's Center. The Women's Center and the African American Cultural Center, neither one of those is a freestanding building. And I don't know for certain, but as I understand, the one at Duke is called a center, but it's not a freestanding building. So I think centers are it's a common expression or common designation for this type of space. Sometimes they might be freestanding, sometimes they might not. But
but the center is a common term for space that's designated for that purpose. So any more clarification needed about that? We did not and have never asked for a freestanding space.
Okay. So there's this reoccurring theme of everyone welcomes here, and even in the first line of the letter from the Chancellor, it says the NC State is dedicated to equality of opportunity. The way I'm seeing this is that by creating a center specifically for the GLBT students, that's taking one minority and giving them this area. Like, I know it's just a couple of offices. When I think that the general broad perspective could be that we could take this focus, because all this focus of everyone in this room, all the support that the LGBT Center is giving, which I give my full support to as well. However, I think it would better serve the campus if we could take all this attention and put it towards a larger multicultural center. Because right now, the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs is an office with two desks and a couple of filing cabinets, which provides no room for programming, no room for students to actually use it. It's just a couple of staff members paid for by the university, and I don't see the students benefiting from it as much. If you look at it this way, then it's saying we're taking all the different groups, having them a place together, which would possibly include an interfaith chapel, because recently different religious groups have been asking for a space. It provides for students of different, just who come from different backgrounds, which would include GLBT, as well as interracial, interfaith, different things like that. And I'm just wondering, is that a possibility? I mean, are we looking right now at just one specific thing, or can we focus our attention on a much broader picture? Because as I see this right now, it's a great idea, and I'm all for it, but I feel that it's completely the right direction, but maybe we need to think bigger.
I could start
now.
I think I mentioned we participated in a national teleconference on how to start a GLBT center, and that specific issue was addressed by the facilitator, who really recommended against that. But I want you to know that we did consider that, and we did have extensive discussions in our subcommittee about what way do we want to go with this, how do we want to take our proposal for our center, as I recall, the message from that facilitator was that especially on campuses where you have a ways to go, where there's really kind of some significant need to get a focus on the GLBT community and bring things along in sort of as rapid as you can to bring that community into the sense of being welcome on campus. That a focused center really is the better way to go than to be a part of a larger conglomeration of differences. Now, I personally would love for us to never need a GLBT center, that we would have a GLBT center that's so great that when students come to NC State, they just know that everyone's welcome and there's never any hatred, never any discrimination, never any disrespect, and then we just close the center and move on. We're not there at all right now. But I do want to assure you that we did look at that model and we discussed that as a possibility. But based on the information that we had, the subcommittee made the decision that we would go in this direction. Also considering that with the African American Cultural Center and the Women's Center, that there was already some precedent set on this campus for that approach. Anybody else want to?
I would just add that the answer to your question really is, first part of your question is yes, we are focusing on the GLBT center. That's the issue. That's from the feedback that we get from the campus community, that's where the greatest need is. There is an ongoing debate in higher education about whether or not to go with a multicultural center or to have these different centers. And the reality is that each campus sort of figures it out for themselves. And what you find is that some places create multicultural centers and keep all their other centers. Or they create multicultural centers and they then try to shut down the other centers. So the way it's handled at each campus is a little bit different, and I suspect that here at NC State, as time moves on, we're gonna wrestle with those issues down the line. But this is today, this is about the GLBT community. This is where the focus is, this is where the need is, and that's why we're here.
Thank you. Well, I've always got a lot of questions, so everybody that knows me knows that I have questions. One of the things that was not presented was any dissenting views on the committee itself. Now, a committee can be stacked to where you have everyone that has one opinion. It's always good to have dissenting views. So first I'd like to know, were there dissenting opinions on some of the conclusions that you finally wrote in your presentation? And then also to inform everybody that what the Senate passed a few weeks ago in reference to the center specifically stated that it be placed underneath Dr. Picard, and that the financial aspects would fall underneath your office as well. And the reason I know that is because I'm the one that wrote the amendment that actually recommended that that take place. So, one, what were the dissenting views, which you didn't present tonight? And then, two, financially, what exactly, Dr. Picard, can your office handle right now?
I hope I get this right. All of us up here, with the exception of Dr. Stafford, sit on the GLBT subcommittee, so they can correct me if I'm mistaken, but I don't recall any dissenting views. The final version of the proposal is, in fact, very similar to the draft that I gave to the committee. There were some things added, some quotes from students, some minor bits here and there, but in these additions, I don't recall any dissensions. Anybody?
I think there was none. I do think it's important, though, to present that, we prepared the proposal, but it was then, that was just merely our suggestion to the University Diversity Advisory Council, who then, as a whole, explore that proposal and then reach the decision to support that.
And I, as I'm the chair of the University Diversity Advisory Council, which is comprised of representatives from just about every corner of this campus, including campus police, housing, deans are on that council, department heads, faculty, students. It's a very broad representation. And there wasn't any dissent. There wasn't any, it was a unanimous decision to endorse the proposal and to forward it to our vice chancellor and our provost.
I'm sorry, there was a second part in reference to the financial.
I almost forgot. Things about budgeting. My budget, like other campus units, is allocated at the beginning of the year, so I'm in the same boat as everyone else that what I got allocated this year were for the programs that I was going to be working on and supporting this year. Obviously, this proposal emerged during the course of this year, so I don't have presently anything in my budget that is committed or that I can just take and divert towards the towards this. But you know, I'm committed in the in our planning process, in the compact planning process of this campus, where we go forth and we make our arguments and we make our appeals for certain funds to meet our needs, that this is a priority for my office. And so in the next cycle of the budget, this will be an item that will be prominent in my compact plan.
I might add just a little bit more to that. The proposal itself suggested, and we had discussed this on the committee before I wrote it, that administratively the center that we proposed be under student affairs, which would be Tom Stafford's operation, but that it be jointly supported by the provost's office and student affairs. So for joint funding. That's not what you recommended in your amendment, but I just wanted to be clear on what the original proposal had suggested.
I have a couple of data points that I'm trying to clarify from the proposal. You mentioned twice in the proposal the issue of the suicide rates being higher in my LGBT students. I wanted to see how many suicide attempts have actually taken place on our campus. In addition, I'd like to know if you have data for suicide and suicide attempts at other CNC campuses. In particular, I'd like to know if you have any comparative data from our school without the center as compared to Chapel Hill or Duke, who do have a center. Just from the little bit of research I've done on their campuses, they have a much higher actual physical violence crime rate against LGBT students with a center in place than we have without one. So I wanted to see if you had any more relevant data to those students.
I think the answer is we are in the report, we're really quoting what are commonly quoted national statistics. We don't have data on, at least I don't have data comparing suicides here versus Juniper Chapel Hill. And I think, in fact, there would be so few that, speaking as a statistician now, I would have trouble making much use of that data.
Richard, do you have any further information about that?
I'm actually still reacting to applauding hate crimes.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how to respond to that.
Sir, I said nothing.
I heard you.
Okay.
I heard applause to the point you illustrated. We don't keep statistics that I'm aware of on how many. And the term is successful suicides, meaning someone who actually successfully dies as part of that. We don't have that. Do we have suicidal students on a daily basis? At this time of the year, yes. At other times of the year, no. Do we know the sexual orientation of every student who comes to our office who's struggling with that issue? No. Sometimes, yes. So I really can't respond to that about the suicidality. I think it's a well-researched national issue, both in youth, I mean, people of your age bracket is the third leading cause of death anyway. And so it's something that needs to stay very much in the forefront. And that it's the climate, that the hostile environment, that increases the suicidal rate in this population, not being gay itself. It is the population and the reaction and feeling unwelcome, because there has been research that has shown of a student or of a person who is well supported and accepted once coming out, their suicide rate reduces back down to the national average as opposed to stands out higher than anything else.
Can you just clarify? I think I might have missed something. You said that there's no data on successful suicides. So I'm not questioning the three times higher, but if we don't do on successful suicides, how do we know that it's three times higher?
I said at this university.
Okay.
The studies that we cited in the article are a mere portion of the amount within the professional literature that researched this issue, and these are national as well as regional research studies that support that.
Thank you very much. And if I could add to this, I realize we weren't talking about hate crimes, we're talking about suicide, but the climate is consistent for both in the sense that students do not feel comfortable to report necessarily when they are victims of hate crimes. So if you asked Sergeant Barnwell what is the hate crime statistic for this campus, it's fairly low. And in terms of, you could look over long term, you could find that there certainly have been incidents of students being threatened or being beat up because of their sexual orientation. So that has occurred on this campus. I would hesitate to think that we needed to wait for a Matthew Shepard to happen on our campus to indicate a need that we have a need for a GLBT center. So I think that the national statistics are compelling enough.
I know you mentioned the campus climate survey that you did. I wonder if you could elaborate in a more general manner about the results from that campus climate survey. And I know you've had a series of panels about GLBT students. where faculty, staff, and students have actually sat in and heard about the experiences of our GLBT students on campus. And I wonder if you could elaborate a general bit about their experiences and why they feel like they're unwelcome in NC State.
Well, there were actually two surveys done. One, I believe, in 2002 was a classroom climate survey, and then in 2004 we did a campus climate survey. And just in general, the results of the surveys indicated, first of all, that many LGBT students, those who self-identified on the survey, did not feel accepted and welcomed at NC State. The results also suggested that in some classrooms at NC State, there are times when there's a hostile climate by either comments made by students or by faculty members towards members of the LGBT community. And that we also learned from these surveys that many of the heterosexual majority at NC State are sort of unaware or insensitive to the discrimination and harassment experienced by many members of the LGBT, and that this is indicated by responding to questions like, how do you feel the LGBT community, does the LGBT community feel welcomed on this campus? And many of the respondents would say that they felt that they were welcomed and they were part of the community and so forth, when in fact, if you asked the actual members of that community, they did not feel that way. So that's in general and broad.
Casey, there are some tables at the back of the proposal that you or others here may want to look at that summarize some of that data. It's a little hard to talk about it without everybody having the tables in front of them. Jose has talked about some of the factors. If you look at those tables, you'll notice that the data have been separated according to GLBT males and females. The males tend to take most of the beating.
That's
a bigger speech.
I have, I appreciated being able to attend a number of student panels, GLBT students who have shared their experiences. And in truth, a lot on this campus, a lot depends on how out they are. This, again, I'm summarizing. I can't tell about my experience because it's not my experience, but I'm summarizing the stories, the threads of the students who've been willing and courageous to sit on those panels. But students who are not out, really, as long as they can fly under the radar, they seem to be having an okay time. They feel less threatened, but they also don't feel great because they're not able to express who they really are. So they're just sort of existing on the campus and doing the best they can. The more out students are, the more likely to feel threatened, the more they are to receive threats and be targets for disrespect and hatefulness on the campus. Residence halls more so than off campus. I think that's probably a logical thing. You're living in a lot closer proximity to the residence hall. I've participated in training of residence hall staff, so I know it's a commitment that University Housing has to provide a safe and welcoming environment in the residence hall. But it doesn't matter all the time. As safe and welcoming as they want it to be, it's not always for students who live in the residence halls, for GLBT students. At a panel that was here on campus this fall, a student talked about having to drop out of a significant out-of-class learning program that student was participating in, something that everybody, probably everyone else that's in that group, sort of takes for granted, that they would be, of course I can be a part of this group, of course I'll be comfortable here, of course I'll be treated appropriately here as a member of this group, but that was not the case for this student, and that student had to drop out of what is a pretty significant out-of-class activity. So, it of course, every individual has an individual experience. And as Richard alluded to, too, a lot of students' success here and ability to sort of maneuver the campus climate has a lot to do with how much support they get from their homes, how much support they get from individuals or their faculty advisors or people that they've connected with through their jobs on campus or through involvement in activities. So that's a real broad sort of characterization. I am happy to say that we've had a number of students on those panels that say, I don't know if they're in there. And just
great about it. She was wonderful about it. And I was really scared to do it, but it worked out great, and we're still doing these after 3 years. And, you know, I've heard some really good stories from those panels that are sort of heartwarming, and yet at the same time, we don't hear that from everybody that's participating in those panels.
The topic I was about to say is for return to the funding issues. It's reported in the technician that the $200,000 startup fee would be paid for by student academic fees and essentially taxpayer money. And I would just like to say that providing support for such a building, okay, so I have lots of friends that are gay and bi and trans and everything, and I'm okay with that. But supporting such a lifestyle is against my religion. And I wish the university would respect this, because I don't think that my academic fees should be going to something that is against my religion. Put in other terms, would you expect a Muslim to pay for a Christian book? On behalf of the student majority, student academic fees are expected and need to go to academics and learning. Diversity can be experienced without disparity. Forcing students to pay against their will is unjustified and will only bring animosity and hostility. If stable, these relationships, they should live it out by example. Forcing students to pay is not the way to go, because it's only going to make me angry. If it's such a great thing, show us by example. You know? I'm scared this building, they're going to become segregated from everybody else. And I don't really know of many heterosexual people that are going to go to this building or attend the event. And I'm not sure that this building is going to be the best way to spread this type of lifestyle. I think that living it out day by day is the way to show it. I just think that earning respect is the way to go, and I would just like to hear from the panel, how do you say that it's okay to use student academic fees to build the school? Or the council and everything, the people who have this job.
I'll be glad to respond to that. First of all, we're not doing a building, as has already been mentioned.
I mean, paying salaries and stuff like that.
And secondly, this is not a lifestyle. It's an orientation. The funding for this is a topic that we have got to discuss and work out. We've not made any decisions about how to provide the financial resources.
It was
a printed technician. It would be inaccurate to make a statement that any particular source of money will be used, because we've not yet worked that out.
Okay.
You made a statement of the point of sexual orientation and being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. It's a matter of who you like our sexual. How can the university support any sexual activity with a center with student fees? What is this demean and integrity of the university, the alumni? I believe the mass majority of schools is against this. And the people on the board, the student council, should expressed in what the mass majority of the students believe. And if we believe against this, why do you think of course in the country?
We're not supporting sexual activities, we're supporting students.
Go ahead.
So, if it's sexual orientation, isn't that sexual activity?
No.
Sexual orientation is sexual. Your sexual orientation.
It's
sexual.
personal development is going to be six. I mean, in North Carolina State law, sodomy is outlawed. How can we even support sodomy that's not allowed?
Sexual orientation is part of your identity, just as your gender, your race, your ethnic background, your ability or disability. It's one facet of identity, and it's a critical facet of identity. Do people in part of their sexual identity express themselves sexually? Yes, and I hope so quite healthily. Just as I hope any heterosexual student who is at a place in their life where they feel sexual activity is meaningful for them. Same thing with any other student. So no, and in no way is a center promoting sexual activity. Just as if a student, any student, gay or straight, goes to the health center and shares with their medical provider that they are sexually active, they will be given education on safe sex. Is the health center promoting sexual activity? Is the women's health clinic who helps provide birth control, is that promoting sexual activity? Are there other reasons? And sir, which if I would be happy to respond, but you were obviously not listening. And you know, in your disregard for me, I'm finding offensive. So I mean, I found your statement, your question, harmful, but I'm trying to respond in a professional way to you.
Well, I apologize for that.
Well, let me finish, please. Because you brought up the point of what is sexual orientation, and is it? And you're quoting, attempting to quote statistics about majority and meaningfulness, etc. But do you have any background as to know how many students would be in support or not in support? No. But I also know that it just is in the same response to the question earlier about comparison of suicides. How many suicides is too many? You know, to me, if one person dies, that's too many. If one student is threatened and feels threatened to the point of leaving this university or diminishing their academic pursuits, that's too many. Just as if any student can't gain access to their material, if a student who is visually impaired, the vast minority of our students still has to have the university to stand strong and provide them the resources that they need.
Okay. Ms. Jack, I'm going to have to interject for the next question to give everybody a chance to ask their question. Bobby.
Thank you for coming on. The big thing I feel is GLBT Center provides is education to those in the GLBT community and those not in the community. Such as the big thing is a lot of people still feel it's a choice. And based on research that we've been doing more and more, something I researched this summer also, is that it's not a choice, it's something you're born with. And I was wondering what the board thought about an education to provide more to the non-GLBT community about these issues, because I know at Carolina, not many people that are not part of the GLBT community are not part of it.
Education obviously is a big part of this. I mean, after all, and I said this earlier, we are a university, and a university is about bringing people together who have different views about, you know, what we think the truth is, and we're here to explore that truth, and we've got to do it in a climate, in a setting that's welcoming, that's open, that's where people are willing to listen. Here, we may not agree with each other. But we're a university, and that's what this is about. This is about creating a climate on this campus for this community so that they can feel part of the conversation. And that's what we're committed to. And you can, you know, sort of frame this in whatever way you want to, but the bottom line is, this is about education. This is about being respectful and open to other views. And again, we may not agree. We may leave here in 4 years, five, however long it takes us to get through, and still feel the way we do, one way or the other. But we've come together for a period of time, and we've been able to exchange our views and our ideas, and some of us will move, some of us might not. But that's what the university is all about.
Okay.
I'd like to address a few of the comments that I've heard real quick, if I may, just 3 points that I specifically heard over and over again.
We're going to try not to. We're going to keep going back and forth, yeah.
First of all, first and foremost, I'm a student at this university. I'm part of this community. Secondly, I'm unlike several others in this room, I'm a taxpayer. So public money is paying for this university, is paying for part of my education. And thirdly, I'm an employer in this community who seeks to employ educated people who look beyond the differences between me and them and looks to integrate those differences in not only the community, but also in the workplace. This is an institution of higher learning. We sit in classrooms to learn about the differences. Like the doctor said, we may not agree. We may not understand. We may not be able to accept. But we learn to look at it from a different perspective. It's not about sex. It's not about my perception or your perception. It's not about higher crime rates. It's about feeling comfortable sitting in an environment with a peer on a different level. It is about education. And it's about understanding the person that's sitting next to you, not because they may be the same color or the same sex, but because they have a different view.
Right
here. I work with an organization in the Triangle where we serve the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. I could not be more delighted by state finally getting a GLBT center. I've been to both Duke and UNC, and they're wonderful, great little offices. I just want to make sure that y'all know you have Triangle Community Works supporting you, whatever we can do. We are also building a community center here in Raleigh for the non-campus LGBT community. Let's work together. I just am so delighted that y'all are doing this, and let me know how TCW can help.
I have an opportunity to I'm a community member, and I work at an agency that regularly has interns from NC State come and work with us during the semester. And several of those interns who have been members of the queer community, the LGBTQ community, have told me that they're afraid when they're on campus, but they fear for their personal and emotional safety. And so I'd like to hear from the panel some concrete steps. I think the proposal is great and what you said is great, but I'd like to hear some concrete steps that will result in the creation and implementation of the LGBTQ Center so that in the future, all of the interns who come to work with us can stay on campus.
The primary response that I would give to you is that this office, this center, whatever it's called, would assume the responsibility or continue the responsibility to educate the entire community. And I think that's our best hope is through education. I mean, there's still a lot of people that think that being a gay or lesbian a person is a lifestyle choice. That's a very simple but very important piece of information that needs to be a part of our total educational program. So my response would be that we should pursue the very best efforts that we can to educate the entire community. That would be my response.
Can I add to that? Several of the things that we do, we would try to do even more of. And that is one thing Stan has done a great job with is he visits, he makes presentations to classes and to residence hall groups, residence hall staff, resident advisors, resident directors. We try, of course, the on-campus population are oftentimes in the first or second year. So the idea is if we can start at the beginning where students begin to experience the campus, if we can have resident advisors in place, resident directors in place who are open, who are supportive of GLBT, who are informed about GLBT, that's a great place to help our student population begin to be informed about it as well.
Our Everyone Welcome Here series that we offer to the campus. Obviously, oftentimes we are teaching to the choir. We don't often get someone who knows nothing about GLBT that just wanders into one of our programs. There are other ways to do programs, not just to have forums and presentations, but posters and films and other displays on campus where people are walking by in high traffic areas. It's called passive programming. There's a lot that we can do. We need more man person power in order to accomplish that. And finally, I would have to mention again our Project SAFE program. Part of the climate survey says that students are subjected to GLBT students here. Even their faculty members make comments that are disrespectful or allow students to make disrespectful comments in classes about GLBT individuals. Project SAFE would be a great way. If we could get all the deans and department heads to come to Project SAFE, then they could help encourage their faculty to either go to Project SAFE or tell them what they've learned at Project SAFE, so that through that kind of education and a little bit higher level of saturation of the programs that we currently have, we would hope to have a bigger impact on the campus.
Can I also add to that, in terms of the getting back to your question about concrete steps, and I already mentioned that one of the things that we do on the campuses in our budget planning cycles is that we, each of us, all our campus units, make an appeal for funding of certain things that we think are priority or that we value. And I've already mentioned that we're committed to that. So that's a concrete step, is to seek those funds. In addition, we're going to have people combing the spaces on this campus, looking for suitable space for an office like this. And so that's a concrete step. And then in addition, we believe that there may be people in the community who would give for this cause, who would donate funds, who would help us with the funding of this effort. And so, again, that's a concrete step that we're going to take in order to try to reach out and be open and express a willingness to accept donations for that cause. So I hope that answers your question.
I got two questions that were emailed to me today. People who really couldn't be here, but the first was, what will the center provide? The counseling center doesn't already provide. And the second question was, did anybody feel, was there any concern that came up during the process about about the center becoming a nexus of hostility on the campus for students in this community? Those are two questions I thought that would be useful for you to answer.
Well, I think I can address the first part. And I think some of that maybe has come out in pieces as we've talked. The main focus of the LGBT Center will be to educate the campus community as a whole, to provide outreach and programming to the community as a whole, to provide sort of a focal point for people to seek out more information and resources, to provide a space and an environment where students can come and feel safe and accepted. I think that's globally how the center will be held. The center will actually not be providing direct counseling services as it's currently being conceived. The counseling center provides therapy, counseling, psychiatric evaluation, career counseling, etc. And certainly not every student on this campus who is LGBT needs counseling. Certainly not every student on this campus needs counseling. And I and my colleagues, I feel, are very competent at providing both counseling services to all members of the NC State community, and feel very solid in that sense. And so as Deb pointed out at the beginning, I think the main interaction and hopefully healthy collaboration between LGBT Center and the Counseling Center will be one of referral, in the sense of I because I am openly gay and active on this campus, I get contacted by people seeking more information who may or may not want to come to my office. And you know that is the role that the center can play, that then can link them up in different ways. As far as a nexus for hostility, I haven't been here that long. It was the multicultural center a nexus of hostility? Was the women's center a nexus of hostility? So I mean, whereas I'm
very respectful that people have differing opinions, but as Dr. Picard has stated so eloquently, that as a university, it is all our differences that really strengthen us as a whole. So I don't really fear it as a nexus of hostility. But other people might have different opinions.
And I was just wondering, how can you build a center that supports a behavior? And I want to ask the board a question. Are you a Christian? Are you a Christian? And if you are not, it makes clear, it gives me a good understanding why. And I just want to say, I understand all the other centers. You know, you have the African-American Center and you have the Roman Center. These things, you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice to be a woman. You don't have a choice to be black. You don't have a choice to be white. But yes, you have a choice to be a homosexual. You choose it. You are not born a homosexual. This is a lifestyle that you choose. And I want to ask, how can you support anything in that nature?
The reason I disappoint is because of the reason I disappoint it is because of what you just said. Well, that's my case.
I'd like to respond a little more fully to the choice notion, because I don't personally think it is a choice. If you look throughout the animal kingdom, they've identified at least 400 species, starting with fish and salamanders and everything up and down, insects, everything up and down through the animal kingdom, where some small fraction, about 5%, 10%, seem to be homosexual. It seems to be throughout nature. The fact is, if you've had a little biology, you know that nature actually loves diversity. Society has some trouble with it. But particularly if you've had a genetics course, you know that nature loves diversity. And within even straight society, you see tremendous diversity in terms of exactly who are you attracted to, exactly what do you like to do, how often do you like to do it. And when you add bisexuality and then lesbianism or male gay behavior, it's just more diversity. So this diversity is a very natural thing. It is not a choice. It is simply the way people are born.
Thanks, guys. Can I say, in order that everybody's question is respected and that they can hear an answer, that we keep the extra comments to a minimum so that while they're asking their question, it's respected and they can also hear feedback to their question, just out of respect for everybody else.
I stand up as a Christian, and I, as a Christian, understand that hatred is an abomination. And I also work at a public institution. And this is my fourth land-grant institution where I work. And I actually support the notion of the separation of church and state, and I believe that a religious perspective really does not come into play in the decision of whether or not to build a GLBT state in London.
I am a member of the LGBT community, and I realize that this is something that's going underway, but it's probably not going to happen for a couple years for financial purposes. What are you going to do now for me? I'm graduating in 3 semesters, and so it's not going to happen in my time. How is there going to be a community formed for me while I'm here?
Well, we presently have an LGBT resource center, and there is a BGLA group and allies. So there is a small community that you can be a part of. And I just hope that it does happen in the time that you're here. That's what I hope. And I'm an optimist. I believe it's going to happen in your time.
Any
I want to ask a couple of questions. One is whether the university has any sense of how many transgendered people there are within the community. Are they more hidden than the GLB people? Are they less likely to come out, whether to you or to the community? And I'm a Christian. I'm also a transsexual woman. Now, he's not going to buy that, so that's the way it is. I've been a Christian forever. And the one comment that I would make, and I would like for you to talk about the transgendered, whether they come out to you or whether they're as visible as they would like to be. But Gwen Araujo gained her respect by being beaten to death by a bunch of people who didn't have the diversity knowledge that they could have had if there was a university with the intelligence to bring the subject out in the open and show people that we're not crazy and we're Christians just like you are, or we're Muslims just like you are, or whatever, but we're human beings who did not choose to be this way. And I thank God every day that I was made this way.
Yes, the T in GLBT is a project that we are in progress with. We do have a transgender member of our subcommittee, and that person has been tremendously helpful. She's a graduate student, and so we employed her considerable research skills to do an assessment of the transgender community for us. It was difficult to find participants in that study. She had four. So that gives you an idea, but there, and another member of our subcommittee, by virtue of her position on campus, is familiar with other members of the key part of the GLBT community. So it is something that we are aware that we need to work on, and we hope that the presence of the GLBT Center would encourage other transgender members of the community to at least not come out to campus, but come to the center and help. Unfortunately, we're sorry that the burden would be on them to help educate us, but to help us know what they need is what I mean by that, so that we can be more sensitive and responsive to those needs. Now, one of the things that we do know just from our participation in the national one of the first things that campuses can do is to identify gender-neutral bathrooms, and that's a project that we have undertaken. So we've gotten a small start on that area, but I think our GLBT subcommittee had been meeting probably 3 or 4 months when one of our members said, you know, we never talk about the T. So we said, you're right. And soon after that, the opportunity came to take. There were 4 faculty, staff, and 2 students that went to Washington, D.C. and got started with that. So we have a long ways to go, but we do hope to provide good support and to be available and open to anyone who needs that.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to allow 2 more questions now because it's 8:25. And you.
Well, not really a question, but more of a statement about feeling comfortable on campus. I know I've been in a couple classes where I felt like I needed to get up and walk out because of my beliefs. But that's something I dealt with. And if I wanted to take it a step further and actually have somebody held accountable for those comments, like one teacher tried to tell me that the CIA was putting things into my head in a couple years, I definitely felt very uncomfortable in that situation. But if I want to take that a step further, I know that I can go to sometimes a student affairs person and tell them that I felt uncomfortable, and then some type of process would happen and someone would be held accountable for that and hopefully fired for saying something like that. So when it comes to building a whole center and kind of throwing money at a problem, I believe it's the club's role and responsibility to kind of be an outreach for the people who feel like they can't do anything about their situation. Like,
one lady said they're building another community outreach. So I don't understand why, if there's something in the community that they could go to and the club could, that we already have on campus and is very well established, I guess, could actually provide transportation to that community center, why is it necessary to build something on campus when there's already something there for this situation? I don't understand why we have to throw $200,000 at a problem that could be solved by really building a club who's going to spread awareness and reach out to people.
First of all, we're not talking about a problem. I mean, we are talking about an obligation and a responsibility that the university has to be welcoming to everyone. And it's really, I think that's the point. The point is it's the university's responsibility. And I don't think that having a bus transport people to a community agency is necessarily the way that we as a university, as a community of learners, that's not the way to embrace the people in this community. So, and we're not building a. We're looking for space that already exists, and hopefully, and so, yeah, that would be my response.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
I think NC State has some unspoken values that we stand on, and that's what. Kind of makes us different from NC State and UNC is we have unspoken values, and those may be biblical and I think if you read between the lines, this is about just NC State getting more funding because we accepted a minority group of people that live a certain way, and What can the students who don't agree, which I think is the majority, do? Because I feel like it's a little elitist group indoctrinating the rest of the crowd about how they think other people should be living their lives.
You know, we ordered a whole warehouse full of toaster ovens. It is not possible to recruit into the GLBT community. You either are or you are not. I did not choose to be straight. I was born that way. And my husband's black. So that is the premise that we are working with. You may disagree with that premise, but the university uses that as a premise. And I would also like to say from personal experience, I have recently participated in the recruitment activities of the university as a parent. And the message that I got at those recruitment activities was diversity. That this university is about diversity. That it's a community of scholars studying a lot of different things and bringing a lot of different perspectives and backgrounds to that study.
Diversity based on what? Yourself?
No, diversity based on everybody. That's what students
are
hearing.
I mean, you have to have a basis.
Wait, I think we're not supposed to debate.
Yeah, we're trying to go back and forth here. No, we'll be over a question, so you can go put your hands down. This is the last question.
Your question was about unwritten things, and I'm telling you what the university is promoting itself as, and that is as a community of scholars where diversity is valued. And the GLBT Center is part of the value of diversity that this community, has.
We're done with questions, everybody.
She didn't finish that.
Anybody else want to answer? Anyone else want to answer further than that?
Recently celebrated a milestone and an anniversary of times when persons of color were first admitted into the university. And so 51 years ago, was it incorrect to have persons of color as part of the university?
Hey guys, if you guys are going to debate, we're going to have to ask you to leave.
And so you know, you're basing your understanding of diversity.
Because I have a base, yeah.
As do I.
You're using yourself, though.
As are you.
No, I'm not. I'm using the body.
Sir, please, would you... We're not trying to debate here.
I know we can't agree on this, and I'm sorry about that, but I have to... we all have to recognize, I think we've done a good job of trying to communicate. It's a human issue in diversity is at a human scale. It's not an individual level.
Yeah, we're done with questions. It's 8:30, and we did promise everyone we would try to get this wrap up by 8:30. No more questions. I'm sorry.
What about the students?
I'm sorry. No more questions.
Ask questions.
Everybody, will just quiet down now. Thank you very much. Stephanie's going to write her email on the board over here.
We don't have drivers.
No, we don't.
We got racks.
No, we're in the field. All right. All right. Well, everybody, pull a pin out real quick. We'll try to. All right. If you want to ask any more questions about this, student government is committed to trying to answer the questions of students today. So we do appreciate you coming out tonight and asking questions. And I do really appreciate the ability. I think overall it was a good event. Thank you very much. Stephanie, again, is the chair of the Diversity Commission within student government. She's got a marker. She's going to write her name on the board. If you've got a question, feel free to email her with it, and we will try to do our best to provide an answer. Thank you again to the panelists for coming out and answering the questions.